Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, February 7th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Josh Rubin's newest film, Heart Eyes. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
And staff writer Ryan Scott.
Hey, hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, guys. I wanted to get both of you on this show because I know that all three of us have seen Heart Eyes, this new movie from Josh Rubin, who directed Scare Me and Werewolves Within previously. And there's not really a ton going on in the world right now, in our world anyway. I mean, the real world, the United States of America, is a friggin' mess, I'll tell you that much. But the in our spaces, I just thought there's not really a ton going on, and we don't have any special interviews with any of the filmmakers behind this film. I just thought we could get on and talk about this movie, which I saw last night in the theater with my wife, and we had a good time with it. I think both of you like this movie a little bit more than I did, just from the general sense that I get from you all talking about it briefly on Slack, but I thought we could just bring that conversation to the podcast and hash it out here. So BJ, let's start with you. What did you make of Heart Eyes?
Sure. So before I dive in, I feel like in the interest of transparency, I should let the listeners know that I am close personal friends with one of the writers on this movie, Michael Kennedy. I dog sit for him pretty frequently. And I was also able to interview the writers, Philip Murphy, Michael Kennedy, Christopher Landon, and director Josh Rubin for the latest issue of Fangoria, which is in print. So like, sorry, can't link to it in the show notes. So I have a lot of like insider info on this movie, which is, you know, a nice perk of having this job. But I've been hearing about them making Heart Eyes for years at this point. This movie has been in development a lot longer than I think people realize, but getting to actually see it and see what they ended up doing with it, the tone that they struck with this, like, I kind of can't imagine a better team for this movie. I think this movie understands its comedic timing better than most horror comedies do, because you have somebody like Josh Rubin, who is himself a comedian, behind it. And then you have like the rom-com elements that are like not afraid to embrace kind of the cheesiness of romantic comedy elements, which is, you know, both Michael and Chris are such like legends at this point of like genre mashups in terms of slasher movies. And I like how honest this movie is with all of its tone. Like, it's not trying to pretend that it's smarter, than the audience. Like, it wants to welcome you into all of its references. I just really had so much fun with it. And even if I didn't know, you know, kind of the inner workings of this movie, I still would have had an absolute blast with it.
Okay, my complaint about the movie, such as it is that I thought it could have been a little funnier overall. And Ryan, I'm curious if you thought this was a funny movie. Did the comedy work for you?
So I should say, I there are certain things that I just become in the bag for right away. And I am a gigantic slasher movie fan. So when I saw this movie was coming out, I saw that Devin Sawa was in it. I saw the really cool mask. I saw that it was a slasher movie. I saw that Josh Rubin directed it, and Werewolves Within is amazing. I like Josh Rubin a lot. So I just said, okay, I'm watching this movie. I'm not knowing anything about it. I kind of thought it was more of a straightforward horror movie with like some, you know, obviously taking place around Valentine's Day. So when that opening scene happens, I don't want to get into spoilers too much, people haven't seen it, but the opening scene like lets you know what this movie is. And I was dying laughing, and I was not expecting it. Like, that was not the kind of movie that I thought that I was getting into. So like, even though my expectations weren't at all aligned that way, I was like pleasantly surprised. I found it to be very funny at times, and then I also found it to just be sort of like cutely funny at times when it was more of a rom-com. So for me, the humor totally worked, because like the way, talking about it with some friends after it was over, I sort of felt like someone wrote like a very serviceable, like straight to Netflix rom-com script, And then, like, for some reason that day, like, the studio executive was giving notes and was like, why don't you put a slasher villain in there? And then, like, that's sort of what the movie is in, like, the best possible way. And so for me, it really works, like, on that level.
It definitely feels like it's elevated because of that mashup, right? Like, if you separate the two things, I think they'd be fine on their own, but nothing special, really. And I think the fusion is the thing that really makes this movie stand out, right?
100%. And I think that, yeah, the two things alone, you know, it's chocolate without peanut butter and peanut butter without chocolate. And then suddenly you slap them together and there you go. But yeah, I think that that's for me what it's like a very effective rom-com, but then throwing these two star-crossed lovers in the middle of like this weird slasher thing just makes it something really unique. And I think the humor is geared more towards like the rom-com element a lot of the times. And then I think some of the jokes obviously play on like the slasher stuff, but I think the rom-com jokes are like very effective for what they're trying to do. And that's not always like that laugh out loud gut bust type humor, but it does. So I think that like meeting the movie on its own terms, the humor really does work for me.
BJ, what did you think about the balance of the horror and the rom-com stuff?
Oh, this is definitely a fine line to walk anytime you're doing some sort of genre mashup. And by and large, a lot of the horror mashups that we have, they do tend to favor one of the subgenres over the other. And I really think Heart Eyes nails it in terms of walking that line. Like the way the camera shoots Mason Gooding is the way the camera shoots Matthew McConaughey in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, where he doesn't even have to say anything. You just know, oh, we're all supposed to fall in love with this character right now, right? Got it. Perfect. And like that is really hard to pull off in a slasher because usually the camera isn't going to give you those like kind of fluttery eyes, like, you know, Wayne seeing Cassandra while Dreamweaver plays sort of like visions. But this movie does that. And I was really, really pleasantly surprised about that because had this been like really leaning hard into the slasher, again, I still would have had fun. Had this been like more of a rom-com with like a little bit of like heightened reality, that still would have been fun too. But the fact that it is genuinely and sincerely true to form for both subgenres is like so impressive to me because it's not easy.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment in the movie actually is the reaction of the waiter at the dinner that the two of them go to. This is not really getting into spoilers yet. So a little ways into the movie, the two main characters meet up for this work dinner and Mason Gooding's character walks in and it is that like sort of slow-mo, everything stops like, oh my God, look how hot this guy is. And the reaction shot is of Olivia Holt's character sitting down at the table. She's already seated at this restaurant and it's a wide shot. So you can see the waiter that is talking to her at the table also looking at him and his jaw is open, just hanging open because even he is like, oh my God, this guy's so hot. So it's just like a little thing that the movie does not like focus on. It doesn't like give him a close up or anything to like heighten the comedy that way. But I just did think that that was a very funny little moment. So Ryan, what did you think about the two leads? I think that's a good transition into talking about Olivia Holt and Mason Gooding here.
I couldn't have imagined a better pairing for this. I think me and a lot of other people are mostly familiar with Mason Gooding from the recent Scream films. And I think he's perfectly fine in those movies. I don't want to take anything away from that, but I all due respect, I didn't leave those movies thinking like, I need to see more of him. Then the second he enters this movie, like, I'm just like, it's sort of like what BJ was saying. I'm like, oh my God, he's like so handsome and he's so charming. And just like, I instantly steals the show. Like just as this was such the right thing for him. And credit to whoever the casting director was for like recognizing that he really had something to offer in that way that we hadn't seen from him yet. And, you know, I think obviously like Olivia Holt was really well balanced against him and she's very good at like playing that quirky, like, oh boy, I'm in the wrong job. You know, again, that typical rom-com thing that they're setting up sort of, but yeah, to me, like Mason Gooding was the standout and just like kind of really won me over, sort of demonstrating a lot of range on his part and just having a blast with it. And just again, like so charming, like truly was the thing that stood out to me.
Yeah, I thought the movie overall had kind of a slow start. There's that whole bit with Michaela Watkins playing Allie's boss, and that performance of hers with the obnoxious Southern accent just didn't really do anything for me. And like, the movie kind of took a little while to get going once it once that opening kill spree that you alluded to earlier, Ryan, concluded. So I was like kind of dreading what was going on because I was not on board with the pacing of the movie in the very beginning. And then ultimately, I think Olivia Holt and Mason Gooding ended up winning me over with their performances because they're so good as this thing goes along. But BJ, what'd you think about them?
Oh, yeah. I think that this is the first movie where they truly, like, somebody truly understands what to do with Mason Gooding. Not to say that he hasn't been great in other things. I also really love him in Booksmart. He has, like, a very understated and important role in Booksmart, and I think he's great in it. But, yeah, mostly people know him from Scream, and this is a movie that really allows him to show the world what he's capable of, and I think he absolutely nailed it. And then as far as Olivia Holt is concerned, I've been a fan of her since she was a Disney Channel kid. She's in this great Disney Channel original movie called Girl vs. Monster that's like a little bit after, you know, most of anyone on this podcast's age. It's a newer one, but she's so good in that. But she was, for me, the best part of Totally Killer. I was like, I am obsessed with this actress. She is doing such interesting work. She is so, so funny. She can has a great scream. That's great. And getting to see her in this role where now she is like kind of carrying the movie along with Mason. I thought she did such a great job. I really like the two of them together. I think they have like very electric chemistry. I completely buy the two of them together in both like the more romantic moments and the moments where it is the typical rom-com, like, oh, we're up for the same job and I hate you. Like, I think that also works really well for the two of them. So very, very impressed by the, like, honestly, the casting top to bottom really works for me. I know you said like the Michaela Watkins didn't work for you. It works for me, but I also like she could just like smile and I'm like, I'm in, I love you, do whatever do you want forever.
Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into some spoiler aspects of Heart Eyes. Did the Hobbs and Shaw thing throw you guys for a loop as much as it did for me? What did you think about that? Ryan, what'd you make of that? I know you're not a big Fast and Furious guy, but what'd you think about that?
Oh, no. I am very pro Fast and Furious from like 5 on, for the record.
Okay.
5, 6, and 7 particularly, like as a trilogy, top notch. Please state for the record that Ryan is pro Fast 5. That was the only joke in the whole movie that I was like, ah, you know, like a little bit, like, especially because Jordana Brewster is in the Fast and Furious movies, obviously. I get why you put that joke in there. Like, I'm not, you know, whatever. Like, but yeah, that sort of threw me a little bit. But not so much that I was like, I was going to roll my eyes hard enough to like take the movie down a peg or anything, right? Like, but it didn't land for me in a way that I was like, oh, that needed to be in there. But I get why you do it.
Yeah. Do you think Olivia Holt's character has seen Hobbs and Shaw? Because if she has, then that presumes that she's probably seen some of the other Fast and Furious movies, which means that she probably should recognize Jordana Brewster as someone who looks exactly like Mia Toretto. But my wife was trying to give it a generous read last night and come up with a way that this could actually work in universe. And she was saying maybe Olivia Holt's character has just heard about Hobbs and Shaw. And, you know, when they introduce themselves, and she was like, Hobbs and Shaw, like the movie, like maybe she hasn't actually seen it. She just knows that it exists. So I was like, that's very generous of you.
Boy, but I really didn't even think about it that much, but that is a bit of like a rabbit hole that you do have to, I guess, suspend at some point. But that can't also, this can't possibly be the only movie. I mean, I think to like Ocean's 12 with the whole Julia Roberts thing, like if we're willing to let that go in Ocean's 12, I am certainly willing to let this go in Hard Eyes.
I would argue that a lot of people were not willing to let that go in Ocean's 12. I feel like that is like the conversation.
I was actually just about to say, for the record, I don't let that go.
Well, so, okay, I have two thoughts on it. In that one, it doesn't bother me because it's the same. I wrote an article once about how the movie Just One of the Guys, Billy Zabka plays the school bully, and the person he's bullying is a woman in drag that they keep talking about how much she looks like Ralph Macchio. And it's fine. I just give it up. I don't care. It's not that big of a deal. But also the fact that the names are, you know, obviously references to things is also pulling homage to one of Devin Sawa's most important roles, which is in Final Destination, where you have all of your characters like Alex Browning and Valerie Luton and Todd Wagner, Billy Hitchcock, Terry Chaney. Like, all of those characters are named after like famous horror directors and people in horror movies. So like, it's not just Jordana Brewster is in the Fast franchise and they're making a Fast and Furious reference. It's also, we're making a blatant acknowledgement to, you know, names that people recognize, which is stuff that they did in Devin Sawa's big like horror franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great call. And speaking of names, I don't know if anybody else picked up on this, but during one of the many cutaways to the TV broadcasts that are sort of setting the stage and explaining to the audience about the Heart Eyes Killer, H.E.K. as he's known in this universe, one of the characters, there's a little chyron at the bottom that says that one of the people talking, his name was like S.D. Wampler or something like that. And I was like, oh, it's a shout out to Scott Wampler, was a great film critic who passed away, I think some point last year. Was that right? So I thought that was a nice little shout out to him that, like, you know, only the real sickos are going to pick up on. But I just thought it was a fun little Hobbs and Shaw thing. I was like thrown in the moment, and then I just couldn't decide how I ultimately felt about it, because I was like spinning out a little bit thinking about the whole like, oh my God, it looks like the character. Why doesn't she recognize her and all that? But anyway, this is like a tiny aspect of the movie. I'm spending way too much time thinking about this. So I did want to ask you guys about the kills in this movie, because I would argue this is probably more rom-com than horror. I don't think this is particularly scary, but there are some pretty grisly kills here. There's an opening kill where somebody's, well, first of all, the first kill in the movie, I was kind of shocked by, because the killer murders a photographer by jamming a knife through the lens of the photographer's camera and like straight into their eye and through their head. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I was not expecting this movie to like kick off this way. Cause I am like not great with eye stuff as it is. And there's like a pretty decent amount of eye stuff in this movie. But there's also a moment right after that where the killer puts somebody in some sort of winery equipment and ends up squeezing her together almost like a Star Wars character trapped in a trash compactor or something. And it seemed as if her eye like popped out of her head before her entire body exploded into bloody goo. So what do you guys think about the kills in this movie, just from like a perspective of a horror fan? Ryan, what do you think?
I mean, look, again, slashers are my thing. And for anyone that's been on any of our year-end podcasts or any of the other opportunities we've had to talk about horror stuff, this is like my bread and butter. You know, I like supernatural stuff when it's done well, but this is what I live for. And it's not always to like have the shit scared out of me. It's just like, I don't know what it is about them that I love, but I love like the formula of it. It's like in the same way that I love reading a Spider-Man comic. I know Spider-Man's not going to die. It's like a soap opera to me. I sort of know what's going to happen in some way, but you like that story. And that's what I really like about this. For as much as it is more of a rom-com, when the slasher stuff happens, they go hard. Like, it is not pulling punches. The slasher is super cool looking, super brutal, legitimate weapons, and like, you see the blood, you see the gore, you see it go. And so I do love that. For as much as it is more of a rom-com, when they pull the slasher card, they really, really deliver. And I think that kind of makes it all the more shocking and like almost funny at points, because it's so over the top. And I really like that, really did a lot for me. And I love, like, from a design standpoint, like the Heart Eyes Killer, like love the Heart Eyes Killer, love the look, love the weapons, love the like little heart crossbow, like all for it, totally into it.
What do you think about the killer and the kills and the character design, BJ?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is Chris Landon just going on sicko mode. I've gotten to talk to both Chris and Michael a lot about their process, and Michael is the first to admit, like, I would just stab everyone forever like Ghostface. Chris is the one that's like, let's add props and make it nuts. And so I love knowing that, like, this is the mind of, like, one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life is coming up with all these weird things. And watching how they were executed, Like their SFX team on this movie was fantastic. I know it's like in the trailer, but the Holloway, like anytime we are looking through the hole of someone's head, I am gonna cheer for it because it is so gross and so wonderful. Yeah, I loved the kills. I love how hard they go. I love that they're very they're very unique kills. They're not, you know, cookie cutter by any stretch of the imagination. Love that. And then yeah, I am gonna second what Ryan said about the look of the Heart Eyes killer is so awesome. I wrote an article for Slash Film about Tony Gardner, who was one of the people who brought it to life and helped design the mask. And he's like an SFX legend, because it is so hard, especially now, to make a slasher design that really just cooks and that people are into and that they're going to want merchandise of it and they're going to want to have, you know, a little Funko Pop of what it looks like or what have you. It's not super easy to do that anymore because everything starts to feel really derivative of each other. And I love this mask where it's like, okay, the goggle type eyes is very like My Bloody Valentine, but it's not. And the actual fabric of the mask looks very like BDSM and like sexy, but at the same time kind of fleshy and leather facey. And then the eyes glow, and like having the eyes glowing in the dark is like so good. Like, why have we not done this already? How is this just like now when we're finally doing this? I think it's so smart.
Awesome. Yeah, there's you're talking about like the kills not being cookie cutter. There's a bit at the end, the very end, and again, we're in full spoilers here, where Jordana Brewster's character is just slowly beheaded, and like the movie really makes you feel the pain of her head separating from her body. It's real slow and just like, oh God, the sound design in that moment
it's
too.
A lot. It is a lot. Yeah. You know, the guy watches a lot of this stuff. I was like, oh, come on. Oh God. Like, you know, I just kind of have that thing of like, but then I'm also kind of like, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. You know, like, cause I do like, I don't know. I do like, if you're going to do something, go for it. Like, we were all here for the year end podcast. You know, that's sort of what makes the yoga kill in A Violent Nature so good is like, you know, like, and I think at that point the movie had sort of demonstrated from pretty early on, like, hey, look, we're going to show some stuff. So I think that like at that point they had sort of earned like a super gross kill. And then that also does sort of play into something that comes up later, which I don't know if we're going to talk about, but it does sort of like really drive home part of what this movie does very well in its, I don't know if I'd call it a send up of the slasher genre so much as like a love letter, but it is very aware of what it's doing.
Go ahead and get into detail about that.
Well, so like, look, anyone who's seen like any slasher franchise ever, like probably knows, like it doesn't matter how dead Michael Myers is, he's coming back if the movie makes money. And in many cases, even if the movie doesn't make money, same with Chucky, same with Freddy, same with like, cause they'll find another way in, right? Like that's why we have all these branching timelines and the Halloween franchise more than the MCU at this point. Like that's just the nature of the business. That's what horror movies do. So this movie is very aware of that. And like, you're setting up all these things of like, oh, there's like multiple killers and blah, blah. But like in the end, like you're watching Jordana Brewster's head come off. Like they're showing like the killer is dead people, you know, like they're showing like this person can't possibly be alive or they can't possibly be alive. So when you get to the credits scene where it seems very much like they're trying to tee up a sequel, they kind of play on that a little bit where they don't end up setting up a sequel, but they're sort of making you think like, oh, are they going to do the thing? And then they don't do the thing, which is like sort of their last little wink to the audience of like, we know what we're doing here. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. I was thinking about, you're talking about like some of the formulaic aspects of it. And especially in that climax, like I was thinking about the giallo genre, which we've talked about a little bit on the podcast, and I'm barely dipping my toe into that. I think I was talking about Deep Red that I watched for the first time last year or maybe 2 years ago at this point. But it seems like a lot of those movies are just mysteries that also have these stylistic flourishes that appear over and over again. And this movie has that as well. I mean, there's a mystery at its core. That's kind of like what all of these types of slasher stories tend to, maybe not like Friday the 13th, but a lot of slasher stories tend to have the sort of like whodunit aspect to it. And this movie definitely has that and sort of nods to it in some fun ways. There's like some very giallo imagery in terms of like the leather glove with the knife in the foreground and like deep focus shots, rack focus shots, and all of that kind of stuff. Like the technical aspects, I thought the movie was pretty on point in that respect. So BJ, I know you have like a lot of familiarity with that genre and stuff. Did you have any particular moments that stood out to you in that regard or anything you wanted to say about that?
I mean, yeah, the Black Glove is probably like our most obvious, but I think the truer connection here is that there is something inherently very romantic and very intimate about giallo films. And because this is a slasher rom-com, like slashers tend to feel sometimes very separated. Like we don't really get invested into a lot of characters, save for like our final girl, we'll get really invested in her, but everybody else is sort of like one note archetypal. We don't really care about them. Whereas this movie, like we care deeply about these two characters. And I think to some extent, we care deeply about a lot of the side characters. We learn a lot about their friends, their coworkers, what have you. And so there's that intimacy that is shared here that feels very, you know, giallo to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we end here, BJ, I wanted to ask you if there was anything in your time interviewing the filmmakers that you wanted to share with us here. Of course, I want to drive people to check out your work at Fangoria, but if there's anything that you can share that were just little fun tidbits about the making of the movie or anything that stood out to you that you thought our listeners might enjoy as well, I'd love to hear about it.
Sure. So this was a fully collaborative project. The idea for this movie came because Philip Murphy was talking to somebody on like a dating app and they had like this great chemistry. Everything was awesome. And then they met up in real life and the chemistry like did not exist. And he was like, what the hell happened? Like, how are we not connecting? How come this isn't working? Like, what situation could the two of us possibly have been in where we could have like recaptured that spark in real life? And because he loves horror movies and is like a screenwriter, he was like, I bet if we were, you know, trying to survive a slasher, I bet that would have brought us together. And that's where the idea for this came from. And then that idea was then, you know, picked up on by Michael Kennedy and Chris Landon, who just like ran with it and like really found this story and, you know, made it what it is. And then when Josh gets put on board and, you know, he starts injecting a lot of like the humor that was already there on the page, but then so much of the humor comes from just his natural comedic instincts, as well as his own inspirations. Like he was also a big person in, you know, coming up with the design of the mask, the fact that a lot of the weapons are bespoke, like that was also Josh's doing. So like, I love that this is a slasher movie where when I watch it, knowing all of this information, I can go, that feels like something that Josh included, or that feels like a joke that Michael would have written. And that's a kill that Chris absolutely would have designed. And all of it is rooted in, you know, this real life bad date that Philip Murphy was on. And I love that. Like, I am very much a believer that the best movies are the ones that are made by people who genuinely like each other. Like, there are so many famous stories about like these two actors hated each other on set and had to be separated. Like we write about them all the time on Slash Film. But I genuinely think that movies are their best when everybody is working together, because I think it's palpable. I think you feel that as an audience member. And I feel that when I watch this movie, not just from the creative like filmmaking standpoint, but also from like the acting standpoint. This cast genuinely really likes each other and they hang out with each other outside of the movie now. And I think you feel that off the screen, which makes me care about the characters more, which makes me more invested in their story. And while the end of this definitely feels like, okay, we're done, if there was like an HEK copycat killer in future movies, I wouldn't be mad about it. I would absolutely watch it.
Yeah, I think that's got to be the way they go if they end up doing a sequel. Ryan, any closing thoughts before we wrap it up here?
No, just that my first real, like truly pleasant surprise of the year. Like I had a really good time with this. It was not at all what I expected, but that ended up being super duper pleasant. And I'm just happy like Josh Rubin got like the big studio movie, and I really hope it goes well for him, because I'd really like to see what he could do next. I'm a big fan of what he does.
Cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about Heart Eyes, including a review, I believe, up at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to that in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.